It's time for some collective wisdom, a podcast advancing the cannabis revolution one conversation at a time. We all benefit from sharing knowledge and experiences. So if you want to learn about the business of cannabis from those in the trenches, you've come to the right place. Here's your host, Lisa Tolner, co-founder of SensiChew.
Today we are speaking with Daniel Yee, and he is the Chief Communications Officer for the Shrine Group. He is an accomplished communications executive with more than two decades of experience. He is also a former staff writer at the Los Angeles Times, and he has led communications departments at the Port of Long Beach and Edison International. Most recently, he helped cannabis retailer MedMen become one of the most recognized brands in the new cannabis emerging industry. And Daniel is also a leading expert in his field and has been featured in news outlets from around the world. And he is here to tell us more about the Shrine Group. So Daniel, welcome to Collective Wisdom.
Thank you for having me.
First, let's start off with learning a little bit more about the Shrine Group and the many aspects of the cannabis industry that you are involved in.
Sure. The Shrine Group was a business before it was a company. So the company itself was founded officially in July of 2019, just last year. But the enterprise itself has been around for years. The founders of the company, the co-founders of the company, including Brian Mitchell, the current CEO, and James Kim, the managing director, have been in this space for years, even before Prop 64. As a lot of people in this industry know, the cannabis space is full of capital in search of ideas and ideas in search of capital, and Shrine Group is neither. It's just, in many ways, a lot of the people who are, especially here in California, who are in the industry are very familiar with this. It kind of grew very organically, right? People came into this space for a number of different reasons, partly because they were interested in medical cannabis. Some people saw this as a business opportunity much earlier than others had. So Shrine Group started with all the partners starting their own enterprise and ventures in cannabis. About a year ago, they looked at their portfolio, they looked at all the assets they own, and they thought we could combine all of this into a holding company would have a pretty nice asset. So that's how it started, and it's been 6 months now, and it feels like 6 years already.
Well, together you were stronger, though.
Yes, very much so. So I think as this industry matures, and I think everything seems to happen much faster this day and age, and the cannabis industry is evolving at a very interesting time just in history in general, right? It's an industry that has come after the information revolution. So everything seems to happen a lot faster. So information travels a lot faster. So our industry has been evolving a lot faster. Colorado legalized adult use in 2012. If you think about the distance between California being the first state that legalized medical use in 1996, and then it took 16 years for Colorado to legalize, and then look at how much accelerated it became right after that. And this year in 2020, we're about to see maybe another half a dozen states legalizing cannabis. So the pieces falling into place, and I think that's one of the things about the Shrine Group. It almost happens naturally as people understand more and more about the space, understands more about what consumers are looking for, and also the fact that this is not a binary proposition, like this is not yes or no. There's a lot of nuances. There are a lot of complexities to this industry. There are a lot of different ways for people to play in it. Yeah, it's very exciting, and it's, Shrine Group is trying to find its own niche or its own sort of role in this industry. And I think one of the things that we're very focused in California, partly because that's where we were born and this is where the founders have started, but it's also because this is the most mature, largest, legal cannabis market in the world. And I think we have an opportunity here in California to show the rest of the world what a world with legal cannabis looks like. And so that's what we're very much focused on.
And what are the assets of the Shrine Group that are public-facing that listeners would recognize?
Sure. So I use this term, it's a bit hackneyed because we say, a lot of people say vertically integrated. So that basically means that we have licenses in cultivation, manufacture, distribution, and retail up and down the state. Just off the top of my head, I want to say it's probably 2 to 3 dozen licenses. We have a couple of outdoor grows in Humboldt County. We have a distribution license in Oakland and here in L.A. We have currently 3 operating retail stores, one here near downtown L.A. and 2 in San Francisco. And the idea is to have a footprint here in California that covers the entire market. The reason for the vertical integration, as a lot of people in this industry know, is in some other markets, the vertical integration is a requirement of the license, right? For example, for the medical markets in Florida and New York, you don't have an option but to be vertically integrated. No other industry works that way. Coca-Cola doesn't do everything from the water to the soda. So The reason why vertical integration exists in our industry today, aside from where the license requires it, for example, here in California, is because it gives you a more reliable supply chain. So that's why we're vertically integrated, because it gives you a robust supply chain. But at the end of the day, our focus is going to be very much on retail. I think in the distribution, in the wholesale, we have Shrine Distro, which is our wholesale business. We've got pretty much all of California covered now. We have a pretty good portfolio of diversified products. And the idea is to control where the brands are created and where the consumers are meeting the brands, which is at the store level.
With that in mind, when you think about the importance of the brand, because as I'm hearing you share that piece of Shrine strategy, that brand component is probably a pretty important piece. So touch on that a little bit.
Sure. I think cannabis is more than just a plant. And people use cannabis for all sorts of different reasons, and it runs the whole gamut. So people often ask, the distinction that we make between quote-unquote recreational adult use and medical use, it really exists in a spectrum. So the example that I use to a lot of people is, hey, before I discovered cannabis, it was very common for me to come home from a stressful day at work and pour myself a couple of fingers of my favorite single malt scotch, take a couple of sips of it, take a deep breath, and now I can face the rest of the evening. I can make dinner for my daughter and go on with my evening. I have just self-medicated, except it's single malt scotch and not cannabis. So that's medication. Also, if you have anxiety in a social setting, whether it's alcohol that helps you get along better in that social setting, or if it's cannabis, again, it's self-medicating. It's all about utilizing things that help you get through this world. So in that spectrum, I think there's an opportunity for brands to identify themselves. At the end of the day, brands are a value proposition. I, as a consumer, because the plant is a commodity, yes. It's a cannabis plant. There are different strains and such. But even within those strains, if you are able to offer the consumer a specific product that is repeatable, that delivers the same value every single time, the same experience every single time, that's essentially what brands are about. It's about being able to repeat and being reliable. And I think that's where we are in the evolution of this industry. I mean, when we say brands, there are a lot of logos out there. There are a lot of companies and products that are already doing that, but it's still wide open. I'm sure there are products on shelves today in our in the market here in California and Colorado and some of the more mature markets that will be here when my grandchildren are here. And some of those have not even appeared yet. So I think creating brands that are valuable, that consistently deliver the same experience to consumers, is essentially what the next stage of this will be.
I hearken back to my years in the agency world where you were really dissecting a brand from the consumer's point of view, and really helping them to understand how does this fit, and building that trust. And as you mentioned, the consistency, all of those things, all those repeatable things that someone doesn't have to think about over time, and it becomes a natural decision for them. And yes, we're maturing in that regard, right. And consumers are starting to gravitate toward those things that they know and trust.
Right. I think there are people within our industry also who think, who resist this idea of brands. They think it's all fluff and marketing, and people within the industry and even outside of the industry. And yes, there's a certain aspect of that. You know, I mean, we joke that, you know, marketing and advertising create needs that you didn't even know you had.
True.
Yeah, but
at some level.
At some level, right. But the flip side of that is, I mean, they exist for a reason. This is how human beings communicate. This is how we know. I mean, brand by any other name is just identity. It's like understanding that there's something specific about that specific product, about that identity, that I can go back and have the same experience over and over again. So I think it's more than just the marketing. It really is about finding the things that speak to me, giving those options to the consumer to find brands that they identify with, building that trust that I know this delivers what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing that resonates with me.
I just reflected back on a woman that I met a number of years ago, and it was at a conference or an event, cannabis event, and we were talking briefly about branding, and she made the comment that their company was looking to manufacture some sort of edible, and I asked her, so who's your target market? And she said, well, everyone.
Right.
I went, oh,
right.
Sure they are. And to me, that, from my years and background in advertising and marketing, that was always the kiss of death,
right?
Because if you can't segment your market, you can't really understand who your customer is. It will
right.
never be everyone,
right.
not really. And you really have to know them and understand them and design that product and how you're going to communicate that product to that target.
Right.
Otherwise, your shots are too broad,
right.
and therefore it will be diluted and mean nothing or just be very weak in
right.
its execution. And I'm starting to see that now, as you mentioned, starting to see the brands. You can really look at the packaging and the verbiage that they use and how the website is communicating, where they're distinctively reaching out to a certain segment of the
right.
market.
Definitely. I mean, the old maxim that if you are everything, you're nothing. It's very true in this case. There are two approaches to this. It depends on where you are in the evolution of the market, and both of them are true. There are two ways that you can tackle this. One is, let's say you want to create a product that has resonance, and like you said, you can't be everything to everybody. So you go and you do some market research, and what's the need that is not being met? What is the demographic that is not being met, or is there a hole that this product can fill? So you can do that, and you develop a product that answers that need. And because it's cannabis, and because we've been at this for a little while, even before there was an actual industry around it, there are a lot of brands in cannabis that have emerged more organically. The other way to go about this, again, not being everything to everybody, but just organically, certain brands in cannabis have appealed to a certain demographic. And our Steezy brand is a perfect example of that. Steezy was created, James Kim and his partners, when they founded Steezy, I asked, actually, when I joined the company, I asked, you know, James, like, where did the idea of Steezy came from? And he had some concrete ideas about sort of the feel and tone of the brand. Like, it's from the word steez, style with ease. It's a very Californian. He's a native of California. He's also an Army veteran. So he came back and he created this brand that very much reflected what he liked, right? And so he said, I was just creating a product that I thought my friends and I would enjoy. And that's perfectly fine, because there are probably millions of people out there who will identify with that.
Let's talk about what you see as the vision for 2020. We finally have really completed the compliance gauntlet by the final kickoff, where everyone has to be on metric now. Mm-hmm. What things do you see in 2020 that are going to be important and meaningful to all of us?
Sure. I think 2020 is going to be a pivotal year. I don't think it's going to be so much that you will see in 2020 any results, but 2020 is going to sort of set the ground for everything that is going to come after. Let's start right at the top. We have a general election in 2020, which is going to have huge repercussions at the federal level. 2020 also will probably see another handful of states legalize adult use and medical use. The train has already left the station, and now it's picking up speed. And then, as I was saying earlier, California is the most important market. I don't care what people say, you know, just by sheer size and just by, you know, the influence that California has on the world. I mean, the whole world looks to California for trends, for whether it's culture, whether it's the environmental movement. A lot of things spring up from California. So it's messy and it's an evolution. We all know about the tax structure here in California. It's, you know, Byzantine. It's crazy. And just the rates. And I think we're all very optimistic and hopeful that what we're hearing from the governor's office, that we might simplify the tax structure for cannabis, might actually lower, and also going after illicit and unregulated market. But the power of California legalizing cannabis is that people from around the world will come here, will see that it's perfectly normal. This is a product at the end of the day, and it's not for everybody. But hey, if it helps you lead a better life, why not?
You know, I've talked with dispensary owners from the Northern California, San Francisco Bay Area, Los Angeles, bigger California metros, and those dispensary owners have all shared that certain times of the year, 50% of their visitors are from outside of California. So if you take even that 50%, there's probably half of that that is from other states in the union. So 25% are international visitors.
Right. I remember actually thinking this is everything builds on what came before. So even before the election in 2016, you know, about Prop 64, there was all this debate going on about should California legalize it. The fact that Colorado had already done it 4 years before, prior, even though it's a much smaller state, the value of having Colorado have legalized it, because it was huge news when it happened, and then people sort of forgot that pot was legal in Colorado. When the conversation started again in California, it felt like the world kind of woke up to this, wait a second, isn't it legal in Colorado, Washington, Oregon already? It's like, oh yeah. Are those states still there? Still part of the union? Yeah. Like when I go to New York, because it's not reality for them, when I tell them that there are stores and dispensaries in California where you can walk in from the street, show your ID, and then walk into a store and see thousands of different types of cannabis products, and you can just shop, and it's reality. And we've been living it for over a year. There are still people in New York who it's a foreign concept to them, right? And so this is partly just a matter of time for people to experience it. It's going to take some time for people to come here and see it. And then once New York and New Jersey and Connecticut legalize it, then that's going to be another huge step. Look at what happened in Chicago. Look at what happened in Illinois, right? They ran out of products after 3 days. So we know there's demand. So yeah, it's going to be a real interesting ride from this point on.
So the Shrine Group is into a lot of different things, very vertically integrated, showing a lot of leadership in terms of quality of product, development of brands, expansion with dispensaries and well-designed consumer experiences in those dispensaries. So a lot of great things, but sure there's been challenges along the way. Is there a particular challenge that concerns you for 2020 with your own growth?
After having been in this industry for now 3-4 years, that feels more like 3-4 decades.
Dog years, cannabis years.
Yeah, dog years, exactly. Nothing really concerns me anymore, to be honest with you. The first year, I didn't know if I had made the right career move, you know, getting into cannabis. So there were some stressful days there. I don't know if I've just gotten used to the stress or if it's just not as stressful anymore, but I am fully convinced that this is going to happen. The future is bright for our industry. Yes, it will be messy. Yes, there will be some stumbles along the way, but this is going to happen. And the prohibition will end in the foreseeable future. 3 to 5 years would be my guess. So nothing concerns me too much. But I think in terms of the challenges, one of the biggest challenges is just being able to pivot with the day, because you never know what tomorrow holds. One thing that happened last year that I think will linger a little bit into 2020 is, we're talking about capital earlier, because the publicly traded cannabis companies took a huge hit in 2019, the capital markets are very depressed, and we sort of experienced that ourselves. The investor pool has kind of cooled on cannabis. So raising money is going to be a challenge in 2020. Here at Shrine Group, because this is a private company, it was self-funded by the partners, we're running a very lean business, and we're doing with what we have. With our expansion plan, we have factories that we have to build. We have stores that we have to build. We have stores in San Francisco we have to build, which is not a very cheap, you know, real estate market. So we do need a lot of capital expenditure, but we are prepared to do it on our own. If the capital markets change and we have an opportunity to raise money at the right valuation, we will do that. But I think it will be challenging for a lot of companies. I think we are in a relatively fortunate situation that we do have a cash positive operation that helps fund the business. But the industry has people who have been in the industry and are coming up, and then there's money coming in from investors who are looking for ideas and business ideas. That part is going to dry up a little bit. So it will be a challenging environment. We'll see who's able to tighten their belts and, you know, get through the year.
Just riding out the storm.
Riding out the storm. And that's a huge part of this.
No, so true. Yeah. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure, and really enjoyed hearing your insights and your thoughts on the cannabis space.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's this week's episode of the Collective Wisdom Podcast. Join us each week for another episode on OC Talk Radio, streaming on Thursdays at 3 p.m., and you can download Collective Wisdom wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to visit cacollectivewisdom.com or email us at collectivewisdompodcast@gmail.com to join the conversation. Thank you for listening.